It comes to us from the 12th book of Romans, verses 1 through 10. And these words tell us, "Therefore, my brothers, I implore you by God's mercy to offer your very selves to Him, a living sacrifice dedicated and fit for His acceptance, the worship offered by mind and heart. Adapt yourselves no longer to the pattern of this present world, but let your minds be remade and your whole nature thus transformed. Then you will be able to discern the will of God and to know what is good, acceptable, and perfect. In virtue of the gift that God in His grace has given me, I say to everyone among you, do not be conceited or think too highly of yourself, but think your way to a sober estimate based on the measure of faith that God has dealt in each and every one of us. For just as in a single body there are many limbs and organs, all with different functions, so all of us, united with Christ, form one body, serving individually as limbs and organs to one another. The gifts we possess differ as they are allotted to us by God's grace, and must be exercised accordingly. The gift of inspired utterance, for example, in proportion to a man's faith, or the gift of administration in administration. A teacher should employ his gift in teaching, and one who has the gift of stirring speech should use it to stir his hearers. If you give to charity, give all to your heart also, for you are a leader, then exert yourself to lead. And if you are helping others in distress, do it cheerfully. Love in all sincerity, loathing evil and clinging to the good. Let love for our brotherhood breed warmth of mutual affection. Give pride of place to one another in esteem." Now may these beautiful words find a place in our hearts, and may we better understand them before this hour has ended.
One of the most wonderful things that St. Paul said, and regrettably one of the utterances of his that has often been misunderstood, is when he said to the Romans, as we've just heard, offer yourself a living sacrifice in the world. Now, we think of a sacrifice, we think of the suffering saint. We think of sacrificing ourselves for a cause, worthy or whatever. Somehow letting people hurt us or life damage us or walk over us. But you see, a sacrifice is when you give something of greater value for something of lesser value. That's a sacrifice. And actually, in the early Aramaic, in the Greek language, the idea of a sacrifice was to give something of your real self, something of value, and to make room for something greater. So when Paul says, present yourself as a living sacrifice, it's a very positive thing. It has a connotation, I know, in the Christian religion, probably from somewhere in the Middle Ages, that a sacrifice can be a needless and sometimes a heedless thing of an idealistic nature. But when you sacrifice, it means that you're willing to give your best and you are not looking to see what you're going to receive in return. And of course, with this kind of attitude, this is what we would call a positive approach in our modern day lingo. We would say, I'm a positive person. It doesn't matter what happens, I'm going to react in a positive way. And so St. Paul said, present yourself a living sacrifice to all of the experience and personality around you. And it's a beautiful idea. To help us do this, I want you to look at the morning program to the meditation. Paul told us today also not to think too highly of ourselves. But he said you have many wonderful things within you and you must learn to use them. And so we are going to say, I am the all-conquering, all-knowing, perfect child of God. I now open my whole being to the presence and the power of God's eternal good. There are those of us here right now who are dualists. We believe in good and evil. We believe in light and darkness. And we're letting it fight itself out within us.
And of course, it will destroy us. If you are a metaphysical Christian, you believe in the one presence and the one power of good spread through life. There is none other. I know there's depravity, I know there's sin, I know there's ridiculousness, but all of this has been the misuse through our individual consciousness and through our consciousness collectively of what we call evil. So we find out that it is the oneness of life, the realization of the oneness of life, that we've come to spend these 60 seconds in finding within ourselves. And to the degree that we find the realization of the oneness of all life and our purpose and oneness in that life, to that degree we will be successful and happy. To no other cause can we lay as the foundation of success and happiness. Let's say this together. I am the all-conquering, all-knowing, perfect child of God. I now open my whole being to the presence and the power of God's eternal good. That's a mindful. Let's say it again. I am the all-conquering, all-knowing, perfect child of God. I now open my whole being to the presence and the power of God's eternal good. Oh, that's so good. Let's say it again. Come on. I am the all-conquering, all-knowing, perfect child of God. I now open my whole being to the presence and the power of God's eternal good. Now, I think you may have been saying that to me. Let's say it very softly, and you say it to yourself. Together now. I am the all-conquering, all-knowing, perfect child of God. I now open my whole being to the presence and the power of God's eternal good. Now, close your eyes so that can't escape. It's inside. Wanders down into your heart, up into all of the parts of your mind. It opens all the closed doors. It brings light and peace and love and all of the attributes of reality and circulates them through your whole consciousness. You are alive with the life of Christ. You are alive. You feel. And you can feel if you desire it. The wholeness of reality moving through your consciousness, moving through your awareness, moving down into the deep parts of your being that you are not aware of at all, but making life light and making love a reality, bringing to you the remembrance of the great power of forgiveness, giving you the ability to sit up and take notice in this hour, to find a renewal, to find a desire, an ambition, to make yourself and allow yourself to be a better person. O Lord Christ, in our midst, in our being, we do give thanks that somehow we have set aside this special hour to renew our acquaintance with thy presence, our true self, within us. Let us hear every word. Let us find within ourselves an awareness and an acquaintance of thee we have never known before. And let us find this is the greatest and the best hour we have experienced thus far in our living. Bless every member of this congregation. Bless our friends and our guests who have come to worship and to feel thy presence with us. And we pray, O Lord, let there be peace on earth and in this hour. Let it begin with me. Amen. Of course, it seems as all anniversaries, in one sense, it doesn't seem like 14 years. In another sense, I can't remember anything else but the last 14 years. There are all kinds of anniversaries, and we have a special one in this service, in this hour. For we have a couple in our congregation that's celebrating their 66th wedding anniversary today, and I would like to have Mr. and Mrs., or I'd like to have Harry and Vesta Reed stand up. They're right there. Let's give them a hand of applause, shall we? That's a long time. of you that are in the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s, now you know. I want to tell us so many things in the time I have allotted to me here. I want to tell you that the wonderful spirit of both the men and the women's groups in this organization come alive in 75. And I know some of you men are going to get badgered by the men's club representatives if you go in to get a piece of cake. You see, there's a plan here to tell you how good the cake is and to get you in there and get you. And if they offer you a ticket, buy one, because I think you'll find on Tuesday evening it will be a great evening for any man who will come. I also want to announce that we have one of those new wonderful infernal machines that's available. There are all kinds of these machines. This one that we have is a machine that will reproduce the sermon that you hear here every Sunday, the lesson. And by the time you walk out that door, they'll be for sale out there on the gazebo. They're $2, so every Sunday if you want one, you can have one, or any Sunday after that. And beginning February 1st, every daily word lesson that's offered, that, you know, our programs are broadcast 6 times a day throughout Southern California on AM and FM stations. And beginning in March, we go to a huge station that covers all Northern California to expand this ministry. But those lessons can be purchased for $1 a piece on a cassette if you want one. And we can offer this all through the Southern California and all over California, that if anyone wants a daily word lesson as it was on the radio that particular day, all they have to do is send the church $1 and we will send them that record. And, you know, even at $1, we still make a couple cents profit. You know that. So it's a wonderful thing. And I think it will benefit our work, and it will bring these lessons so that if you like some particular thing, you can have them. Now today, our lesson is entitled, The Secret of Success and Happiness. And it is a secret. Most of us, we're so busy making a living, we forget to live our making. Now that's a cliche, but it's true. So many of us are so busy doing everything that we let the anniversaries come and go, and we really don't come to grips with what life is all about. And of course it is to be and to become. Life is no mystery. I know we live in a time, and it's a wonderful system economically, at least it's the best, I think, on the face of the globe, politically and economically in this country. We have this tremendous media that is continually telling us what we need, what we have to have, what we can't do without. And it works because they wouldn't spend billions, millions or whatever in advertising if we didn't go down and buy that particular brand. And advertising is great because it increases it's educating in most cases, and it increases our awareness of what's available, and we buy it, and it makes more jobs. It's a tremendous thing, and it benefits us if we buy the right thing. But we find out that sometimes we are so oriented toward what's new and what's best out here that we have forgotten what's going on inside. And we know for many, many centuries, the Christian church has been so stable in its message that the church hasn't grown and mankind has. And so we have almost an archaic belief, pardon me, that there is a boogeyman out to get you, but there's a good guy that'll save you. And that with inside of you, you are terrible, but if you come down and stand on the steps of the sacred building and go through certain things, you will be saved. Not now, of course. This all happens later on. So you, when you realize all of this, if you begin to think about it, you think, this doesn't make sense to me, and you drop out of the whole thing. Where really the spiritual truths that Jesus taught us had little to do with the church. You know, the word church, ecclesiastical, comes from a word which means to be called out from. Has nothing to do with a building. Has nothing to do with a denominational status. Has nothing to do with sign a card and put yourself under the pink umbrella in a group insurance plan that allows you to enter into certain high-priced gates at a certain time in your involvement, that has nothing to do with any of that. And this comes as quite a shock sometimes to us, because we always want to feel safe. We want to live in the right area. We want to have the right kind of job, wear the right clothes, drink the right soda pop. And we also want to be sure that our spiritual awareness is pointed in the right direction. It is an inner direction. It is an inner awareness that we find within ourselves that we have to come to. We have to come to ourselves. I can't blame it on God. I can't blame it on the devil. I can't blame it on my neighbor. I can't blame it on my genes or my early environment. I can't blame it on the society or the establishment or the economic condition. One of the first things you learn if you're going to be a real Christian, follow Christ, is that you have to accept the whole responsibility of where you are and what you are and why you are. Now that is hard. That is very difficult, because the politicians of today, the economic geniuses, are all telling us we have to band together, we have to fight for our rights, we have to take on a new image. But I tell you, as Christians have had to do all down the ages, you have to find yourself, and you have to take the responsibility. I am what I am, as Popeye used to say. I guess he's still saying it. But it's true. It's true. You never know from some little teeny thing what's going to happen in life. When we come to this particular Sunday every year, I like to tell you something of how we got started. And I've told you how I started the congregation with a few people, and I went knocking door to door, and it was a pretty humble beginning. I think back 14 years ago today, and there were more people joined at the first service than we had in the congregation on that first service. That's well and fine, but so what? Where do we go from here? You know, it's so easy to get to the place where you think, oh, it's all paid for. Now, don't anybody rock the boat. Don't buy anything. Don't ruin anything. We'll just keep it going, and we'll just go right along. But you find that churches, like businesses, like families, like individuals, there has to be that something within us that is the character of our being that says we're pleased but not satisfied. We are continually wanting to expand. And Jesus Christ himself said the kingdom of heaven is the kingdom of expansion. And to show us what he meant, he said, liken unto yeast put in bread that leavens the whole loaf. If you don't continue to expand, you're dead. So the kingdom of heaven is the kingdom of expansion. And you are happiest. You are the happiest that you can be when you are in the process of learning something. I don't care whether it hurts you to learn or it makes you smile to learn. You are happiest when you are learning, when you are growing new growth. In a few months, when the trees begin to sprout and the blooms begin to come on them, you recognize the fact, don't you, that it's only the new growth that produces the fruit. Not the old growth, the new growth produces the fruit. I tried to remember in this particular anniversary Sunday what I might share with you of one of the early things that started us. And it dawned on me a few days ago that I suppose if I had to find the seed where this grew from, I would have to go back to a late afternoon in 1958 when I was walking along the commercial area, business area of Huntington Park, a suburb of Los Angeles, and I wasn't looking where I was going, and evidently Una Harrison wasn't looking where she was going, and we bumped into each other, and I felt awfully bad about it because she was a little lady and a senior citizen, and she said, oh, before I could say anything, oh, I'm so glad I caught you. She should have said the classic remark, I'm so glad I bumped into you, but she didn't. And I said, well, I'm so sorry, Una, what? You know, let me help you. And she said, oh, I've got to run, I've got to hurry, but I've got something I want to give you. And when somebody says that to a minister, you know, your antenna goes out. She said, I've got something I want to give you. And she reached down in her purse and fooled around and pulled out three $5 bills with a paperclip on them. She said, here. Now, of course, people are saying, here, here. I know they don't mean me. But I know that it's for the church. And so I took that, and she said, use it for what you will. Use it for something big, great, wonderful. And she dashed off. And I put that money in my pocket, and that evening I put it on the dresser when I took my wallet out of my pocket and change and all. And I thought, $15, and I was serving in the Christian church then, and the Disciples of Christ, and I thought, well, let me see. I'll give that to the treasurer when I go down to the church. And the next day I forgot it, and the next day I forgot it. And somebody came up to me 3 or 4 days later, and they said, you know, Reverend Stevens, you ought to be on radio. I couldn't have agreed more, you know. But it was pretty impossible, I thought. And then I thought, well, just for fun, I'll find out. I knew nothing about the radio business. So I looked in the yellow pages under the businesses, and I looked under radio stations, and I found there a representative. And I called her up, and she had didn't know me. I didn't know her. And I found out she worked out of her home. And so Alice, I can't remember her last name. She's since passed on. Alice said, well, what can I do for you? And I said, well, you're a radio representative, aren't you? Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, I said, I'm Reverend Stevens, and on with my story. And I said, I'd like to be on the radio. And she said, wonderful. She said, how much would you like to spend the day? And it just came into my mind, $15. I knew I had that much. And I said, $15 a day. And she was very nice. Under the circumstances, she should have just hung up. But she said, I'll see what I can do. And a few days later, Alice called me back, and she said, Reverend Stevens, I've got just the station for you. She said, it's a new station. It's down in Tijuana, and it's broadcast clear up to Santa Barbara, and it's $15 a day. And I said, well, how much, when would you bill me? And she said, oh, well, for you, we'd do it at the end of the month. And I thought, wonderful, wonderful. I've got one day, and I'll go from there. And so we did. I started broadcasting. The church board wouldn't have anything to do with it. They were pretty wise. They said, it's your thing. You do it. And I said, but I've got $15. They said, keep it. You do it. So we did. And the first letter I got on the first day was from San Diego. And so that's, I suppose, how things started. You know, you never can tell. Yerna Herrinson has since gone on. Alice has gone on. I don't know if Yerna could stand here today and look around, if she would ever believe that maybe that $15 triggered a series of events that started something like this. You never know in life what you're doing. You never really know what's in the seeds that you're planting. I can only imagine. Some of us plant some pretty terrible seeds, angry seeds, fearful seeds, you know, selfish seeds. Can you imagine what might grow from some of those? And some of us can so easily just plant a smile, a friendly handshake. What can come of those things? Well, of course, you know, sometimes I feel like we're the fellow that sowed his wild oats all week and then went to church on Sunday and prayed for a crop failure. You have to be careful what you are planting, because your life, dear friend, is made up of what you are. And when you pray, you can only receive what you are. That's all. Don't pray for love and kindness and joy if you're a stinker, because you won't get it. You will get exactly what you are. You can receive nothing else. It would, for instance, be as holding a mold of a gingerbread man out and praying for a gingerbread elephant. It won't work, because the mold, which is your awareness and your consciousness and your character, can only receive what you are. And so we find the Christian religion teaches us that we must become and we must grow in consciousness. And it is in this way that we create the mold that God, who is no respecter of persons, pours the reality of himself in, and it takes the shape of what we are. And doesn't that make us stop and think? Doesn't that let us see that all of this negativity that we may be freely giving out and thinking about is building a mold that will hold and shape what we don't want? And when we come to this, we think, my goodness, I've got to start thinking about life a little bit. I've got to start making some new sets of feelings and new thoughts. And that's why in this particular study we have classes, and we have a tremendous book library, tremendous reading that we study and work and think and meditate and pray. Why? To change God? No. God is perfect. But to change the attributes of the character of our awareness and consciousness, so when reality flows through us, we receive what we are, and we are grateful for what we are. When we understand this, then we are at the beginnings of realizing what life is all about, and we are beginning to understand what success is. Success is not money. If it were, everybody that had $1 million would be happy, and we know they're not. Success is not fame, because we see oftentimes, to the regret of all, the famous people who are doing some pretty foolish things in the headlines of the paper. So we know that that isn't the answer. It's wonderful to be wealthy. It's comfortable to be famous. But we want to what? Be successful. And we want to be happy. And we can be. But we have to learn how to think. We learn, you know, success is as much a matter of elimination as it is accumulation. We have to know what to give away as well as to know what to take. I suppose that man is destined for achievement. And the greatest satisfaction that comes from life comes from achievement. It doesn't matter whether you're baking a cake or building a building or walking down the street or getting through a social evening and being kind to everyone. All of that is achievement. And each one of us are in the process of achieving something right now. I don't know what you're doing. Maybe you're out on an ego trip and you want to achieve that. Well, it has to be real. It has to be real. The mind can play all kinds of tricks. They make everybody think, I'm great and wonderful. But you know, deep down inside, you can fool everyone, but you can't fool yourself. I was talking to a young man the other day that was pretty argumentative with me. And I saw his point, but maybe it's worth saying what I said to him. The young fellow, he was dressed in distressed clothes, and I didn't want to say he looked like a bum. He was a nice person, well-educated, smart, mannerly, nice. He said to me, Reverend Stevens, why don't you get off this kick of all this material stuff? And why don't you live like some of the rest of us? And I said, well, tell me a little more. It sounds pretty interesting. He said, well, all of this economic thing, all this money thing, all of this grabbing and looking and searching and finding, why don't you get off of that? I said, well, have you? Why, he said, of course I have. Of course I have, he said. Why, my needs are simple. He said, I buy all my clothes at the Salvation Army. I said, well, that doesn't mean anything. You might find better clothes there and more to your liking you find anywhere else. And you might be smart. They might be a lot cheaper there than they are anything else. That doesn't mean anything. But I looked at him, and he did. He had very simple clothes on. He had patches. I suspect he'd sewn patches over no holes. But they were there. I didn't go into that. But I happen to know that this fellow does live a simple life. He has no responsibility. He doesn't want to work. But you know, he has a record collection probably worth a couple $1,000s. And he certainly didn't live simply when he bought the stereo that he has. It's fantastic. But you know, sometimes we think we're living the simple life just because we dress outwardly a certain way. But inside, where his real needs are, he wants the very best and the very expensive. I think we have to look at ourselves and be very careful and very honest when we set off on a particular bend, and especially if we criticize or we judge anyone else. We all should have a right to do what we want to do within the bounds of not harming anyone else. But we shouldn't be self-righteous about it. What is success? I think success is motivation, and motivation comes from desire. And I think you are right now the sum total of many things, but the sum total of your desires. And you should know what they are. And in meditation and quietness, you will find out what they are. I think sometimes ambition is a force that we often neutralize by hardship or by pleasure. Sometimes if things get too hard or we get too frightened, it neutralizes our ambition. Sometimes if there's too much pleasure in our life, it will neutralize our ambition. But man is made with a great desire. That desire can be perverted. That desire can be twisted and turned. But your greatest desire is to be a successful human being. Now, you may have many ideas of what that means. But I'll tell you, it is in the simplicity of that meaning that you find happiness. To be a successful human being, what does that mean? It means to be a nice guy. It means to be a nice person, nice woman, a nice child. It means to be loving. That's all. It's so simple. It doesn't matter the simplicity of our dress or the simplicity of our views of life. It means just to be a nice person. It means not to believe your own publicity. It means to be non-judgmental, I suppose, in the last analysis, that you don't judge anything. And if you don't judge other people, you won't even have to judge yourself. We find here the real success in life was meant to be attained on all three levels of our being, on the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. You know, I'm for the achiever. I believe it is better to win than to lose. Now, in our society today, sometimes you wonder. But I believe it's better to win than to lose. Whether you're rich or poor, I believe it's better to win than to lose. I believe it's better to get an A in school than it is a C. I believe it's better to what? To be the best you can than to be mediocre. I believe that. And I believe that life was made that way. And I don't think there's any system of the world that doesn't think that way either. No matter whether you get it rewarded in money or rewarded in a pen or rewarded however, I think the greatest thing we can do is to be a good human being and to be the very best we can. And you know, it's possible in life when you learn to think about it rightly to win without wounding. It's possible always to win without wounding. It's only our ego that wants to wound. The greatest responsibility entrusted to each of us is that we develop ourselves. Jesus Christ, I'm sure, knew this. The greatest responsibility Jesus had was to be a good example. And everything else was secondary. And you in your life, and wherever you are in life, your greatest responsibility is to develop yourself. Erase what's on the placard you're holding now and write on there, I'm out to be the best person I can. Hold that up for a while. And you'll find out if you do that, you will get the meaning of what the beginning of leading a successful and happy life has to be. We are to succeed as human beings. You know, in life, to get profit without risk, to get experience without any danger, and reward without any kind of work is as impossible as to try to live without being born yet. There is risk in life. There is the risk of failure at every turn of the road. But if you'll take the word failure and remember that failure and final come from the same old Anglo-Saxon words, you'll find out there is no failure in your life if you refuse to accept it as a finality. That's why the fellow that jumps up and tries again is the fellow that doesn't know failure, because it never exists. I'll tell you something else about failure, and that is that most of what you know, you've learned because of your failures. We learn very little from our successes. And all the wisdom that you have stored in you, you've learned, and you really should give thanks for in a positive way the many times you failed, because that's where you learn. Show me a person that's never had anything but success, and I wonder. But show me a person that's been beaten down and beaten down and beaten down and keeps bobbing up again, and there's a person. A real person, a person closer to success than the world will ever give them a chance to admit. Happiness, and I've got four rules for happiness, because I think you should know this about success and happiness. two things first about success. You want to realize it comes from desire. And before you do anything, examine your motives. And if you'll look at your motives, you'll find out where your desire and if your desire is really good. You can carry soup for 30 years to the little lady next door. And then when she passes on and doesn't leave her $1 million to you, you may be unhappy. You may think you failed. You may think you weren't successful in what you started to do. But you see, in all the time you were carrying that soup, you were doing something nice, but you were doing it for the wrong reason. And there are so many people who do so many wonderful things that they never receive the successful reward for, because they've done the good thing for the wrong motivation. And they end up very bitter and cynical in life because they won't face their motives. And each one of us, as we accept the responsibility of being human beings, must look at our motives and see what they really are. If you're going to be successful, you must look at your desire and your motive. And secondly, you must be willing to take a chance. Now, if you want to be happy, I've got four quick rules. I don't know where the time goes. It's going to take another 14 years to tell you all the things I want to tell you. Rule number one, you have to decide to be happy. Decide to be happy right now. Say, I'm going to be happy. And then start being. You can, you know. Marcus Aurelius, probably one of the wisest of the ancient Romans, said, very little is needed to make a life happy. It is all within yourself and in your way of thinking. And of course, Abraham Lincoln said, you can be as happy as you make up your mind to be. So I tell you, make up your mind to be happy. Nothing wrong about that. There's nothing bad about being happy. There's nothing sinful about being happy. Suffering saints think that you have to be sad and everybody's going to pay attention to you, but people pay more attention to the happy people. Number two, try to remember what worried you and robbed you of your happiness 10 years ago, a year ago, a month ago, a week ago, yesterday. Probably can't remember. So think right now, it isn't that important. Number three, believe in the forgiveness of God. What is the forgiveness of God? I've got an old fig tree in my backyard, and before I moved there, evidently somebody took a hatchet or a butcher knife or something and just hacked that tree. Probably some child. Just had a good time playing Paul Bunyan or something. Chop, chop. Well, you know, that tree immediately has healed. Immediately I can just see the sap going down to heal. That's what forgiveness is. Forgiveness heals. So you were a nincompoop at some time in your life. So you willfully did things that you knew you shouldn't. You have a few scars. Forgiveness is the healing, and it's a natural thing. You hardly have to ask for it. It's wonderful to know enough to give thanks for it. But it starts healing. It starts making right. And the fourth thing is, start living today and stop worrying about tomorrow. Start living right now. Enjoy being a human being. Enjoy having the capacity to be loving and kind. Enjoy being able to smile. Enjoy being able to step back and let somebody else stumble through the door first. Enjoy being real. And you shall be successful. You can't help yourself. It'll happen in spite of yourself. If you will watch your motives and check your ambition, if you'll not be afraid to take a chance on being the best you know, and if you follow these four rules, simple rules, on being happy. Let's be still a minute. Let's be glad that we've heard a portion of the good news in this hour. And the good news is very good. The good news is so good it can overcome any problem in this world. The good news is real, and best of all, it dwells within us, only waiting for our desire
to go and get it. This we pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.